Ja, gute Woche. We are in Chavis Halvavis Shara Bitochen. Perek Dalim. The paragraph that starts Aval Im Yone. We started seeing last week. It's the way to relate to enemies, people who are out to get you, Khalilah. So we opened it up last week and we started saying that it's a little bit confusing. It has to be properly understood. So let's see. If you have enemies in your life, v'chaimdav, or we'll call it competitors, people who are covet what you have. People would like to run your business out of town. People who are out to get you in other kinds of ways. So this is number one. Realize that this too is from Hashem and you want to respond accordingly. So first of all, realize that they can't affect you. They are not going to affect your life unless this is something that Hashem decided for you. So we spoke about this last week. Don't get. Now I'm gonna be talking confidently now. But again, here I'm talking to myself. These are things that require work to get to, and I should be zeich at some point in my life to get to these madrigas. But like we often say, easier said than done. So let's at least say it. So that we'll do the easy part so as to hope that we'll be more in position if Khalilah were actually tested with the hard part. So number one is, like we said before, they are powerless. It's all about Hashem. Whatever he decides should happen to me. And therefore, I don't really put much emotional energy into them. It's just like Hashem, if Khalilah, the same way, if Khalilah, I would hear that there's person has to get tested because the doctor said there may be something wrong. So here also, we say that it's easier then in such a situation to say, oh, wow, I have to direct my tefillahs to Hashem. So the chiddush here is, and this is where it'd be talking, gets more challenging to be able to relate to things that people are doing in the same way. Because a sickness, chas v'shalom, or things like that, okay, this is clearly from Hashem, situations like that. But this is just that other person. So here's the chachma to be able to say, no, he has no effect either. It's all about what does Hashem have in mind for me? And then he goes on and says, v'yisbol cheopasam, tolerate the offenses that they're doing to you. And don't pay them back accordingly. No, do chesed for them. And do whatever you can for them, whatever good you can. Now, I know this sounds like, you know, if someone comes and breaks a baseball bat over your head, so you should apologize for the fact that it's broken, see if you can fix it, pick it up off the floor and hand it to him. But that's not what's being said here. We don't subscribe to if someone slaps one cheek, turn him the other cheek. We'll put it all into perspective. It's going to be our subject. And remember, that your benefit or your harm is all only up to Hashem. Now, again, we're going to read the paragraph without comment and then come back to try to put it all into perspective. If they do cause you harm, still try to relate to them positively. And attribute these events to, there must be something that Hashem is dissatisfied with in my life. Who's your address? Go and daven to Hashem, v'yivakesh milfanav l'chaper avonisov, and ask Hashem to atone for your averis. If you relate to it this way, you'll find that your enemies will end up, they'll come back, and they'll apologize, and they'll become devoted to you. Like Shlomo HaMelech said, when Hashem really approves of somebody, when Hashem is happy with, proud of a person, then even his enemies will come to try to be his friend. So let's put this all into perspective. We're being given a process of a few different steps to take when Chalila, you're involved in some sort of personal falling out. So number one is the overall perspective. This is about Hashem and me, whatever's going on here. And therefore, we go to the next stage. And here, what's really behind everything going on here is a distinction that's subtle, but it makes all the difference. What do you do if a person breaks a baseball bat over your head? Well, I don't know if you're in a position to do anything at that point, but someone really hurt you, is damaging you, harming you, whatever it is. So let's say it's a type of situation where summoning him to a Din Torah is relevant. So summon him to a Din Torah. But that's all. Pursue it. Push the case in the Din Torah, but keep it impersonal. That's really the point here. Take the measures you need to take according to halacha, the legitimate measures that you need to take to protect yourself while keeping yourself emotionally detached. The tall order, but this is really the point. Don't allow it to turn into a personal vendetta that you become emotionally involved in. Easily said, and we're going to be elaborating on that, but this is really the goal. That is the goal. As Ovdei Hashem, this is the goal that we want to set for ourselves whenever Chas V'Shalom we find ourselves in such a situation. This is about Hashem and me. That's A. B, I am and should take technical steps to protect myself. I have to clarify what those legitimate steps are and take those steps. Keep it limited to that. Outside of that, keep it impersonal, keep it cool. And even, like you said before, continue to do things for the person if relevant. Continue to do things for the person if relevant. It was a just an example of not letting things get personal. Just classic. Rav Gussman moved his yeshiva from America to Eretz Yisrael. So he actually had a whole dilemma. He had two possibilities: if he should make his yeshiva in Geula or in Rechavia. Rechavia was a very irreligious area, which was actually hostile. I forgot exactly what the ins and outs were, but his decision ended up being to make it in Rechavia, secular, hostile area. So when he established his yeshiva there, so one of the first days that he was there, some guy bumped into him in the street, one of the people in the area, and said to him, "Oh, so we're going to have all your talmidim now throwing stones at us." All charedim throw stones. "So we're going to have your talmidim throwing stones at us?" So Gusman looked at him and said, "Even worse. By the time we're finished with you, you're going to be the Bismedrish learning with us." Right. Classic. Classic. But I want to develop our picture a bit more. There's like a very, it's a macho kind of tone. Like if you ever heard like this type of talk, very, very like macho and manly. You know, "I'm a very nice guy until you get onto my bedside," right? Say with a certain pride, with a certain manly pride. "You don't want to know me if I'm, you know, once you get me upset, then I'm a very unpleasant person." Say with a certain pride, with a certain, okay? If we'll translate that into Jewish terms, it would be inappropriate for me to say what that actually translates as. As soon as you get me upset, I'll do something very, very mevaze to myself. Okay? That's basically what it translates. There's absolutely no dignity, glory, manliness as far as we're concerned, and a person being able to say, I am capable of completely losing control and having no reins on myself at all. Anybody can do that. A dog can do that too. I've seen cats do it, right? So where's the pride there? Where's the I'm capable of behaving like an angry lion, like what? So there's a beautiful piece later in the Chavis HaLavis, which at the rate we're going, I believe we should be there in about 15 years. That might be optimistic. But in Shara Prishus, he has a lengthy description of what he calls the Parush. The Parush, for us, the word Prishus sounds like, ascetics, someone up there in the clouds. But in the Chavis HaLavavis, you often see that the Parush is just the way we would use the word tzaddik, he uses the word Parush. So he has a very beautiful, it's a parak that just describes the Parush in very, very beautiful poetic terms. It's an inspiring parak to read. It actually holds especially personal significance for me because the first time I actually heard that parak read out was at the hesped of my grandfather, Zichrono Livracha, was the Rav of Meir Yaakov, a very, very noble, but a lot more than that. He was one of those people that he said, it was astounding how many people fit into his heart. So that was the first time I actually heard it read out before I actually learned it personally. So since then, every time I get back to that parak, it has that whole special meaning for me. Whatever it is, there are two phrases there that are especially striking. When he's describing all the different attributes and characteristics of the parush, there are two phrases there that are particularly striking. He says, "Machloktoi ni'ima u'tshuvosoi nichbedes." Like we said before, you don't want me as an opponent, right? You don't want. So basically what he's saying is, I'm a pleasant opponent. It's okay. I don't think I want you to, to get into trouble with me. I mean, it wouldn't be good for me. But if you get into trouble with me, you'll find me to be a pleasant person to be in a dispute with. That's basically the lashon. Machloktoi ni'ima. A dispute with him can be a pleasant experience. U'tshuvosoi nichbedes. Tshuvosa nichbedes means that his response is always dignified and respectful. We're in a dispute. There's something going on. Whether it's personal or not personal, I'm not responding personally. You are going to encounter a pleasant person. The interactions are going to be pleasant. It doesn't mean that I'm going to lie down and act as a doormat. I might push my rights. I might take measures to protect myself, and you might not enjoy them. But it's going to be strictly within that framework, right? I'll take the very precise steps that halacha tells me to take, right? I might sue you. I might do other such things. But you're not going to get me at all out of that technical box. It's not going to become any more personal than that. On my end, it's going to remain impersonal, detached, and even pleasant. You call me the next month that you want to borrow money from me, it'll have absolutely nothing to do with what's going on between us right now. It's two completely separate tracks. I'm going to do what I need to do. I'm going to protect myself. But A, I'm going to keep it within the confines of halacha. And B, outside of that, I'm going to be as pleasant as ever. Now, again, that's a tall order, but let's set our sights, right? There's already growth in setting the sights. There was a maizu with Rav Moshe Feinstein, where there was I don't know exactly what happened. Yeah, there were two parties who decided to deposit money by him to safeguard. One of those situations where they were making a deal and they wanted the money to be by a third party. Okay, they entrusted the money with him. And whatever it was that developed, it ended up kind of turning into a din Torah, and he had to paskin, and he ruled one way. So the other party, let's say he ruled in favor of A. So B had this like young yeshiva man who he was in touch with, who went ahead and learned up the Indian a bit and decided that Rav Moshe had paskined wrong. Really, his guy should have gotten the money. So he called up Reb Moshe and asked him, what's this? And Reb Moshe very patiently, in his classic manner, explained his reasoning. So this young fellow told him, you missed an open Mishnah. You missed an open Mishnah. Mishnah is, fifth grade level. And Reb Moshe explained to him why, if you just read the Mishnah without any commentary, without learning the Gemara, et cetera, it sounds that way. But he explained it, and the person, very, very, with a lot of chutzpah, was basically telling Reb Moshe how ignorant he is, and he doesn't know how to read a sefer. Okay, that was the Maisa. It ended. That was the end of the story, end of that chapter of the story. A few months later, this person wanted to get a job either as a mashgiach or a shochet. He needed reference. He needed hamlatzis. Oh, so he already has a relationship with Reb Moshe. They had already debated halachic issues together. Reb Moshe knows about his knowledgeability and his high level in learning. So he very comfortably called Reb Moshe and asked him for a hamlatza. So Reb Moshe said, "No, come over, we'll speak." And he came over, and Reb Moshe went through the material with him, and tested him, and Reb Moshe ended up saying, "Okay, he knows the material well." He gave him a warm hamlatza. So it was very just classic. So that's what that was the story, and that's that we understand the relevance to our point. Reb Moshe didn't back down back then. Didn't back down. But now this person, Lamaisi, is qualified. I'll give him the hamlatza. Rabbi Yaakov heard about this mice and he said, that's Reb Moshe acting as a malach. But I think he did the wrong thing. Because Mela, Reb Moshe wants to be moichel on his kavod. But then what happens with the boss of the owner of the factory who has to deal with this guy? Okay, that's a technicality. But this is the point that we're getting across here. Of course, we're setting ourselves a high standard if we're using Reb Moshe to illustrate it. But this is what we're talking about here. To be able to say, I am not allowing myself, whatever's on the personal level, whatever aggravation, whatever agmas nefesh I'm going through, that's between me and Hashem. As far as between me and this person goes, it's like any other area where I figure out what is the ishtadlus, I do it. Without investing myself in an emotional layer, this is really bringing it back to the general rules of bitachon and ishtadlus that we've been discussing. What did we say about all ishtadlus? What did we say about working for panasa? What did we say about dealing with a medical crisis? We said that you determine what is reasonable ishtadlus. You go about doing that reasonable ishtadlus without being emotionally invested in it. And that's all. And everything else you relate to is coming from Hashem. So here we're saying the same thing. Emotionally, it's a giant step further, but it's really the same principles. When it's somebody else, there's that personal edge there, and we're saying, you know what? Here, it's exactly the same rules. I figure out this person is causing trouble in my life. He's causing me harm, etc. What is the ishtadlus that halacha expects of me / allows me? Let me do that in an impersonal, detached kind of way, and outside of that, to say. Outside of that, so turning the other cheek would be a clash with ishtablis, but to simply remain with the same pleasant disposition towards this person, that's the test. Here the person is saying, I understand that this person carries no weight as far as this goes. This is all about me and Hashem. And on the contrary, Hashem is testing me to see, how am I going to relate here? I want to add a point. Very often in a dispute, this is the way I've heard it said, and it's a very profound point. In every dispute, there's the person who's right and there's the person who's wrong, right? Not always, but sometimes. I might even say in a minority of the cases is that clear cut. But sometimes you have a dispute, you have the person who's right and the person who's wrong. You know the Maisa? I think I heard this from my mother about the two litigants who came to a Rav, or maybe it was a husband and wife, the Shalom Bayis issues, and they came to the Rav, each one full of tainus, and the Rav listens to him, and he tells all of his tainus on his wife, and the Rav says, you're 100% right. And he listens to her, and she gives whole version of the story, and he says to her, you're 100% right. This Gabbai was standing in the room and he says to the Rav, 1 minute, him and her said opposite things, they can't both be right. So he looks at his Gabbai and he says, you know what? You're 100% right. So, forgot how we got there. But we're coming back to this point that, yes, you have a dispute. That's how we got there. You have a dispute. You have the person who's right. You have the person who's wrong. The way I've heard it said, and this is very profound, is that, so you think, okay, the person who's right is right. A person who's wrong, you know, he's getting himself in trouble with Hashem, etc. You know what? Sometimes the person who's right can get himself, just to put it bluntly, the person who's right can get himself deeper into Gehenna than the person who's wrong. Why? Because dafka, because I'm right, I feel like, what do you mean? This is so wrong. This is so unjustified. Rah, right? And you just let the other person have it. Even when the other person is wrong, you have to be very, and you're right. It doesn't permit everything. And that's a big test to be able to say, okay, so what does Hashem allow me to do, want me to do in this sort of situation? And just to keep it to that, this is a very, very great test, not only of character, but of bitachon also. It comes back to that. This is why it's here in Shaar Bitachon, of Hashem saying, look, I'm sending something very, very aggravating your way. Are you capable of seeing through the person and realize that this is me sending you a curveball? That this is me sending you a curveball, and therefore, like in any other area, what is the warranted hishtadlus? Do that hishtadlus. Turning the other cheek is not hishtadlus. No one will say that that's the hishtadlus that Hashem expects of you. Do that hishtadlus. Protect yourself according to the permitted means. Take the person to a din Torah according to the halachic guidelines. If they tell you to sue him in court, sue him in court, etc. Or whatever else it is. Like we said before, sometimes it can mean learning martial arts and in real time giving the person a knockout punch. Might mean that also. But then afterwards you call to see how he's doing. No, don't do that, because that will really just get him even that much more upset. But you know what you could do? You can call a neighbor and say, I know of a very good doctor who's good with broken noses. And let the neighbor follow up. A big test. I want to bring this out. I think that we touched on this last week. But this is beautiful illustration of it that comes up later in the Chavis HaVavis. A little bit of a tangent, but let's do this tangent. David HaMelech. You know, I should preface by saying that David HaMelech is learning the sugya of David HaMelech, the parashiyas of David HaMelech in terms of Tanakh, was I found one of the sugyas, one of the parashiyas that like most affected me in terms of the relevance of so many of the different parashiyas in his life. How you have the Rabbi Gamliel said that David HaMelech is the name that appears most in Tanakh, more than 1,000 times. I didn't count it, but that's what he said. It more than 1,000 times, and it's the appears more than Moshe Rabbeinu. I'm not going to announce right now. Okay, Rabbi Gamliel, I feel like it. Rabbi Yosef is starting a series on David HaMelech, 4 years, but let's focus on one piece of his life. David HaMelech was very, very ambitious. This is what actually made him misunderstood as a young man in his parents' home. Extremely ambitious, to the extent that the person looking at it from the outside, a person who knew him as a kid, saw it as ridiculously ambitious. David HaMelech made a few blustering declarations, and one of them was, he said to Hashem, we say, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, you identified yourself as Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. I want you to identify yourself as Elokei David also. Who's going to come and say that, right? So Hashem said to him, they withstood very, very big tests. So David HaMelech said, so test me, because I'll identify that as a misstep. Never ask for a test. We try to avoid tests. We daven to avoid tests. And at the same time, we recognize that tests are the meaning of our lives. They will give our lives their true meaning. While part of our test is to try to avoid them, take the ones that Hashem sends you. Never look for tests. And Hashem sent him a test. and it didn't work out well. The success really wasn't what happened after that. But again, like I said, Bezos Hashem, maybe we'll get to that series. But the Maisa, David went through the chet of the story of David and Bathsheba. This created a situation shortly afterwards, not shortly afterwards, whatever it is, subsequently, there was the rebellion of Absalom against David. David's, what could be more painful, right, than his son is coming in rebelling against him. But we have to understand the whole setting and context of the rebellion. You know what the setting and context of the rebellion was? It was that David HaMelech, you know, we've seen plenty of examples in history of a great person who ended up being misled and fell and lost his place in history, right? Korach, Doeg HaDoimi, Yerovam ben Nevat, great people who ended up just not being able to hold up with the tests that Hashem was giving them, and they fell. This was how David was being portrayed, that David was brought to a very great place, he was made the Melech, and then he fell, and that's it. He's being rejected by Hashem now. This was the atmosphere that was going on at the time. He has a very, very great son of Shalom, and he is the future of Klal Yisrael. He's the future of Klal Yisrael. David, this again, he's saying this is how it was coming across at the time. It was another tragic case of a great man who fell conclusively and is now being moved off the scene. Many of the great people in Klal Yisrael were viewing it that way. This was the Hashkafa, right? Absalom was rebelling against David, and we're seeing Hashem move a rejected king off the scene, just like it happened with Shaul, just like happened with other people in history. You can imagine the humiliation, mortification. David is being driven out of Yerushalayim with a handful of followers. And we have to approach it properly because we know the story. We know that it doesn't take long. You just keep reading for a few more minutes and David is back on the throne. But you have to go back into that stage in time. David is living in Yerushalayim. In his mind, he doesn't know if he's ever going to be coming back. He's leaving now. He's been expelled. He's been rejected. This was perhaps the lowest point in his life. Maybe. I'm not sure. There were low points in his life. What happens now? As he's running out of Yerushalayim, Shimi ben Gera was a person who he had been good to. Comes and like kind of like as they say in Hebrew, it's an English expression, it spreads salt on the wounds, terrible salt. He's there yelling the worst insults at David, hitting him in the rawest places. So one of David's officers says to him, David, you still have the din of a king. You still have the din of a king. We should go kill him. And David responds and says, no. Don't kill him. His words were, "Pelekim omar loy kalel." Hashem told him to curse, meaning I'm not hearing him right now. I'm hearing Hashem talking to me. I'm hearing Hashem's messages coming down to me. This was David at the lowest point in his life. This is David's response. And we know the continuation of the story. Chazal tell us that it was at that moment that David was catapulted to that level of the regular Revi Bamerkava, that dream that he had asked for earlier. I want to be known for all the rest of history. I want you to identify yourself, Hashem Kiviyachal. I want you to identify yourself as Elokei David. That dream, that she'ifa, happened now. That moment, David still didn't even know that in his mind, he didn't even know that he's going to be back in Yerushalayim. He didn't know if he's conclusively rejected. It was at that moment that he became the regular V in the Merkava, the fourth, whatever that means exactly, the fourth wheel in the heavenly chariot, Kiviyachal. There's Avram, there's Yitzchak, there's Yaakov, and there's David. Those words of like, I think this was pointed out last week, that actually he did have a duty, midine hamalucha, to see to it that Shimi ben Gera would get punished. And David balanced both. He said, I'm going to keep this. I'm not going to indulge any of my personal feelings here. And therefore, what he did was, on the contrary, he granted Shimi ben Gera prestige for the rest of his life. And when David was dying, he left instructions for Shlomo to carry out the execution as was halachically required. But David said, my life, I am not going to indulge those personal feelings. On the contrary, for me, this is about me and Hashem, and about me responding correctly to Hashem. And as we're seeing, this is what made one of the greatest people of our history, Chazal, identifying this as the greatest moment in his life. This is when he reached that madrega of becoming one of the shining stars in the firmament of Klal Yisrael's history. And this is basically what we're describing here. Of the ability to just see those personal attacks as Hashem. And here we're seeing how David also combined his duties, right, with the things that he had to do. A king is mechuyev to protect the standing of the malucha for the sake of the nation. It's not his personal. But he did that while at the same time saying, me personally, I'm going to completely swallow it and move past it. So coming back to tie this up, it's the understanding that there is two layers of Avodas Hashem here when we're talking about dealing with a personal feud, a personal dispute, whatever extent or level it might be. There's two layers here. There's obviously the test of character. The test of character of, are you able to maintain your character in the face of, while on the one hand, doing what you need to do. I keep stressing that. It's not the philosophy of turn the other cheek. It's not a value in allowing yourself to be abused. Figure out what you need to do. Do it in a detached, impersonal, emotionless kind of way, and continue relating to the person with however you would have related otherwise. It's probably a bit difficult to do, but as much as possible to say, this is not going to affect the way I relate to him on the personal level. But we're seeing that it's not just a test of character. It's actually squarely in the context of bitachon, the understanding that any aggravation that I'm going to could only happen because this is what Hashem wants me to experience. And that's where my emotional energies have to be placed. The emotional aspect of it is just between me and Hashem. I think we quoted Rabbi Tauber last week on this, so I won't repeat it now. About the Kriya Shema Lamita, I'll repeat it briefly. I think I said it last week, I'm not sure, but Rabbi Tauber said that we start the day with Kriya Shema, and we end the day with Kriya Shema. And before Kriya Shema Lamita, we have a little paragraph, that famous declaration of Hareini Moichel, right? Kol Mishiachi speaking, etc. That whole declaration of Mechila. Rabbi Tauber said like this, he said it so beautifully. He said, you start the day with Hashem, and what is Kriya Shema? Kriya Shema is Yichud Hashem. Meaning you start the day by setting your sights throughout the day. When you say Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, Shema Yisrael, meaning you're talking to yourself. You have to understand that's what Kriya Shema is. Kriya Shema is not a tefillah. Let's understand that. Kriya Shema is a statement to yourself. That's why we have halachic differences. Shema Esrei is kemedaber b'fnei hamelech. Kriya Shema einoi kemedaber b'fnei hamelech. That's why with Kriya Shema doesn't have the same strict rules in terms of the way you have to stand and present yourself, etc. as Shema Esrei does. Because Shema Esrei, you're talking to the king. Kriya Shema, you're talking to yourself. What are you telling yourself? Shema Yisrael. So for all practical purposes, I'm saying Shema, I'm saying, listen, Binyamin, right? Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Hashem is one, meaning there's only one thing going on in my day. I stand at the beginning of the day and I'm creating a focus. There's only one thing going on in my day, Hashem. Breakfast is Hashem. I feel Hashem caring for me. Then I step out and someone gets on my nerves. This is Hashem throwing me a curveball. How are you going to respond now? It's me and Hashem. Anything else that goes on throughout the day? Challenges, successes, mitzvahs, nisyonos, etc. It's all about me, and this is Hashem Echad. There's nothing else going on in my life except Hashem. Okay? Say Shema with a lot of resolution. You step out into the day, Hashem Echad. Finish davening at 8:45. And it starts fading as you get all involved with the day. And it's hard to remember. By the time it's 11:30 and someone starts up with me, so it's this person echad right now. right? And it's hard to remember the Hashem Echad. But I try. The Mincha, I refocus. That's really the concept of davening three times a day. It's kind of like you move into this world, but you report back three times a day to regain that focus, and we'll report back to Hashem and then take it further. But it fades, that's the nature, and I try to keep the focus. And finally, I get to the end of the day, and there have been the different aggravations and the different tests, et cetera, et cetera. So here, you tie up the day again with Hashem Echad. In retrospect, I come back and say, okay, I might have lost the focus a bit throughout the day, but now you know what? I'm coming, and I'm tying up the day with, okay, now let me get it. There's a lot of value in the retrospect also. Immense value. It's not like, oh, you missed it. There's a lot of value in coming afterwards and say, okay, I might have been thrown at the moment, but I'm putting myself back in that place. So I tie up the day with Hashem Echad. I tie up the day with Hashem Echad means, oh, yes, what happened at 11:30? What happened at 4? Taka. It wasn't about that person. It was about Hashem Echad. Ooh. If I really gained that understanding, then it follows naturally that, if so, it's not about them. And I continue and I say, what is it about? I say to Hashem, this is about you imposed these things on me. Perhaps it was because of my sins. So forget them. I'm moichel them. Hashem, help me not be two more aveiros. This is what we're saying in that declaration. So this is that point. It's that layer of how to relate to the personal adversity with that view of this is about me and Hashem. Hashem wants to see how am I going to respond to that. Okay, with this, we tie up this section of the perek. And the interpersonal, the applying bitachon to interpersonal areas of life. And next week, in Mitzvah Hashem, we move on to an even more delicate field of how do we apply bitachon in the realm of mitzvahs and averus. And we'll see. I'll just throw out the idea in a very general way right now. We'll see how the Chovas HaLevavos himself is going to approach it with a lot of trepidation. When you're talking about mitzvahs and averus, chiyuvim, where do you say, well, it's up to Hashem? And where do you say, no, it's up to me? How do you apply that? This we'll see next week in the session. Good to vote. Yes.